From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. When Diana Abu-Jabr was a young girl, a waiter at a Chinese restaurant watched her savoring a meal, discovering radical new tastes and sensations. He said, "So you come from cooking." And she does. Her new book, The Language of Baklava, is a memoir told through food. It explores the larger lessons that food can bring, lessons about identity, faith, and love. Diana Abu-Jabr's father was born in Jordan. Her mother is American. Her father was the cook in the family. She remembers being a six-year-old slung over his shoulder as he stood at the stove. She would feel him cook.
He could make us falafel, and he could make baba ganoush, and roasted shish kebab, and we could taste and experience his cultural identity through his cooking.
His name, his given name is not Bud, but he takes on the name Bud as he comes to this country. And you have a recipe of his in the book for chicken livers, and you say, in the course of this recipe, Bud recommends that you sing softly to the livers as they're cooking so you don't rush.
Right. He's a very sentimental fellow. You know, my dad, he sang when he cooked, he danced, he involved the whole family in cooking. The kitchen was a lively, colorful, fascinating place for us, and we had our greatest conversations and debates over the dinner table.
You write about the whole family moving from the area around Syracuse, New York, to Jordan when you're eight.
Yes.
You up and move. And you describe in the book a trip that your father takes with the family to a Bedouin village.
Yeah. My father had said that he had this important question that he wanted to ask his great-grand-uncle, I believe. It was the sheikh of this Bedouin encampment. And we drove out. It seemed like it was a million miles away from everything to me. It was very romantic, and the dust was swirling around. And we saw these people when they were still eating communally and living very close to the land. There are still Bedouin who do this, but much fewer than there used to be.
I'd like to have you read from this section. You're describing a feast that is prepared, and it's a wonderful description about the community and the food and the culture. So I wonder if you could read from this section. It's starting at the bottom of page 64.
Okay. Let's take a look here. It takes three strong, stringy men to upend the immense cooking pot onto a serving platter big enough to hold Monica. People gather around to watch the great pouring of the mensif. The meat, rice, bread, and sauce mingle, satiny as a risotto. Its aroma streams through the air, thick and liquid. The air sparkles with it. The silver tray nearly covers the table, and we stand in a circle pressing against the edge. The men and the women eat separately. But because we are special guests, they invite us to eat with the men. It's so crowded that we must stand sideways, with one hand, the right, turned toward the food. The tent is a goat hair canvas, staked to long poles, covering our heads but open on the sides, so the wind pours through and works the canvas like a bellows. The moment feels charged and fabulous, like the opening seconds of a play, and everyone presses close. The old sheikh nods and says, "Sahtain, sahtain, alhamdulillah, to your health, thanks be to God." And so we start.
The feast that your family is treated to here is a mensif. What is that?
Well, mensif is a kind of Bedouin rustic banquet-like dish, and it generally involves some form of meat, a lamb or goat. It can also have chicken in it, and then it's combined with a sauce. Generally, it's a thickened yogurt sauce, and you stew the meat in this yogurt sauce with onions, and then the whole thing is poured out over a bed of rice and shredded up bread. And you eat it with your hand, you dip your hand into the bread and rice, and you do make this little food dumpling out of it. And then you just pop the whole thing into your mouth, and you feed the children from your own hand too. It's considered the greatest form of affection, actually, is to feed a guest or a friend from your own hand. And it's a very sensuous, very all-encompassing way of eating and involving yourself in food, involving yourself in family and community.
How easy was it to pull up these memories from so long ago?
You know, it's funny. I didn't think I could do it when I started. I had this idea in mind that I wanted to write about my family and my own life through food. And then I kind of panicked and I thought, well, how do I do this? And luckily, my family is so food-centric, so obsessed with food, that it really came back to me pretty easily. I think that we all carry around these crystallized nuggets of memory, these moments in our lives. And for me, the food memories were so imbued with meaning and emotion that I was able to kind of move from one to the next. And as I wrote the story, they would take on the details and the textures of my own memory and made themselves into stories.
Your earlier books have been novels.
Yes.
And this one is a memoir, which is a different undertaking. How important was it for you to be truthful, to stick to facts? And how much latitude did you give yourself for expanding, for inventing a bit?
Well, I will tell you the truth. I give myself a fair amount of latitude. I have a real novelist's kind of perspective, I think. And that means that you never, never sacrifice a great story just to tell the truth. You have to let the richness and the beauty of the story manifest itself first. And so one of the barriers that I came up against in writing The Language of Baklava was that our memories and our lives don't seem to fall into neat narrative arcs. You know, memory tends to be fragmentary, it tends to be diffuse, and I was able to build on these key moments, but I also found that I had to do things like, sometimes I would take two characters and make them into one person, or I would shift a location, or I would give it a different timeline in order to give it a more satisfying, real story feeling, building tension, having a kind of sense of insight and revelation that comes through that building and a denouement. I have to admit, I love that kind of dramatic structure, and so I did work that in there. Yeah.
Diana Abu-Jabber, thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you.
Diana Abu-Jabber's book is titled The Language of Baklava. You can find some of the recipes included in the book, including poetic baklava and nostalgic chicken livers, at our website, npr.org.